So two things I wanted to put in front of us before we get going. One, sales and marketing alignment can help business become 67% better at closing deals. That's massive. Any effort that can charge your revenue stream that much needs to be talked about. Two, 12% of B2B buyers want to meet in person with a sales rep, but 71% of them want to start with branded searches. The reason that's important is the next step that we're going to talk about with Will, we might call the handoff, or, you know, we're just as such SEC football people. We call it the handoff, but it really should look more like a rugby scrum, like sales and marketing together carrying the ball forward. And I think that's actually one of the points of the conversation about revenue operations. Hello, Will.
Hey, what's going on, Sean?
I think I just greeted you twice, but I like that. You're worth greeting twice. So what is this RevOps thing? It's been all the rage. Everybody's talking about it. In fact, I saw a LinkedIn study that said there's 22,000 open jobs for revenue operations in America. So that's a lot of people, a lot of people looking for somebody to help. So what's that look like? Probably mostly larger companies. We're seeing revenue operations pushing down into the middle market rapidly. And there's a lot of questions about what it is, how to use it, and why they should be doing it. So we're going to answer a lot of that. We're going to eliminate some of that confusion in this series. So obviously, sales and marketing alignment, in fact, invariably, sales and marketing alignment is tied to revenue. So let's talk about this second step, these stages when somebody has moved from preparing to buy something, maybe even moving into action, taking action and exploring what it would look like for them to make this change. And how does sales and marketing interact with each other? Now, we also know from Will's earlier comments, RevOps does include this alignment between sales and marketing and customer success and innovation. But for now, we're going to focus on sales and marketing because that's the bulwark of the work and the conversation. So let's dive into that. Will, tell us about middle funnel as the consumer is going through this buying stage. Tell us about what that alignment looks like. What's happening?
Right now, in most organizations, this isn't happening. And this is one of the reasons why we're talking about this issue. We jokingly call it the handoff because that's what it is. It's not marketing and sales together closing deals.
It should be rugby, not football.
It should be rugby. An SEC guy admitting that is tough for me.
But just don't tell our friends.
We just won't tell them. So if it's not happening, then there's opportunity for things to change. If you go back and listen to our demand generation episode and you've got the right tech stack, you've got the right processes to increase your lead quality, then communicating that and giving that to sales is one of the biggest opportunities that marketing can control. And that's how do you deliver the lead to sales? And that really has to go from, you know, maybe making marketers uncomfortable. And that's getting into the CRM. It's creating automated sequences for sales and making sure that they have the right dashboard and intelligence on, hey, here aren't these 100 leads anymore. Here are the 5 that have interacted with these web pages. They've read this content and they need this messaging. So what we're seeing in the handoff is the lack of business intelligence, the lack of understanding data, and not knowing where the buyer is or potential buyer in the journey. That's what's currently wrong with the handoff.
So you mentioned sequences. I think that's pointing toward another piece of technology we use. We picked on Pardot in the last episode. So let's talk about HubSpot in this episode. They've created this thing called sequences, which is nothing more than a workflow of emails that allows sales to be more efficient when they're trying to get a prospective buyer to do something. Maybe it's a demo, maybe it's up to simply an appointment.
Yeah, it's repeatable processes that, yeah, one of our clients requests a demo is a very common late stage conversion action on our prospect. So if it's the same 7 steps every time, why not automate that?
Yeah, perfect. You know, I've been in this field in some sort for 30 years, and the older I'm getting, the more passionate I am about helping business leaders understand how to leverage marketing as a serious business tool. Revenue operations is even a bigger picture, and it's just as important. But when I've been helping an executive working with somebody, and I've had over 5,000 engagements in my career, which is a lot, right? The one thing I've consistently seen is marketing thinks they're done. Often, especially immature marketing, thinks it's done. Or if you've hired an ad agency, but you're in a B2B environment, then your agency, if they're a consumer-minded group, they think they're done as well. Because in consumer, your decision, it's single person and it's made fast. I can decide to go buy a store and buy a shirt on the way home today. In fact, I might. There, I just made a decision.
Or directly from Instagram.
Or, yeah, get on Amazon, right? So, I mean, those are all examples of quick decision-making. So, agency work tends to be early stage and effective. When we're auditing prospects or current customers, we're often seeing the wreckage from the agency because they don't know what they're doing late stage. One of the symptoms of that is sales doesn't trust anything marketing's doing. So, we often will come in and say, give us a chance. Let's work on some high impact event, some experience. For example, often we'll do an account-based late stage marketing tool and help somebody close a big deal. And that's a great way for sales to go, huh, maybe marketing can add value.
Right, right.
So what's a good example of that? How would somebody listening maybe apply that idea?
Yeah. So in one example, we had a client that was chasing really a guerrilla client for them. It could have, if they landed it, it could have been a multi-year revenue producer and was important that they invest marketing dollars to target them. So really it came down to marketing understanding the pain points of the customer.
Yeah.
Hear that? Marketing understanding pain points.
That's great.
And is really pushing them to maybe do field interviews and understanding that, hey, when they get to this stage, we need to talk about customer service and we need to talk about efficiency. And if our ads, our website, if it doesn't talk about that, then that potential buyer is not going to buy from us.
If I remember in the case that you're talking about, that we actually went in and not only understood the basic pain points of a buyer, but we understood this specific, and I would call it an elephant, not a gorilla. A gorilla is kind of negative, right? You're in trouble with a gorilla. Yeah. An elephant can be okay as long as you follow it up with other elephants.
Right.
So this idea of hunting elephants, it's a real thing. So you actually were able to use account-based marketing, which is a tech I would like you to talk about, and were able to deliver messaging to different executives of a company, to different geographies where that company was based, with specific messaging that directly pointed to their last vendor's failures.
Right.
So we didn't use the past vendor's name, but if we knew they had a problem with delivery, we made specific claims around delivery. If we knew they had a trouble with long-term maintenance cost, we made specific claims that addressed that. It was one-to-one marketing.
Yeah.
Well, that's powerful. Sales gets that because that's what sales does, right? When sales is meeting with a prospect, they're learning, they're asking questions, they're intaking, and they're uncovering these specific points of pain, where marketing looks at a segment and they discover generic points of pain.
Right.
So this late stage exchange handoff time can definitely be improved if marketing will get engaged. I keep talking about getting out with sales, but understanding the specific nuances of closing the deal, because marketing should be supporting. In our methodology, the cognitive marketing framework, we're saying early, right after somebody's come off of a website, early, maybe it's 50-50 marketing and sales, maybe it's even a little heavier sales, but then right before a deal gets signed, it's obviously heavy sales. Sales closes deals. We believe that. We believe marketing's job is to help sales close deals. Well, why in the world would marketing stop? Why would any executive want marketing to quit delivering messages?
Right.
We saw some data recently. You shared touch points that it takes to close a deal.
16 to 21.
Yeah, touches to
on
close
average,
a deal.
Yeah.
So why would we stop delivering touches from marketing? And why wouldn't we, if sales knows exactly what those touches need to be, deliver those? So I'd say an executive that wants to begin this revenue operations test, one thing they could do would be to focus more on what is marketing doing? How are they engaged with late stage deals, late stage closing methodologies? What's the engagement there? And if you don't see your marketing team engaged there, and if your agency never even thought about being engaged there, it sounds like a negative, but actually that's great news. That's a lever you can pull in a way you've never pulled it before. you're going to get lift. You know, we know the promise of RevOps is 16% lift just by implementing it. Well, why wouldn't you increase your revenue? So it's good. If you do this little kind of self-assessment and see that opportunity, that's powerful.
Yeah. And to your point with account-based marketing, that's, think of that if you're not using that. So sometimes people use the phrase, but it has, there has to be a technology buying platform that's administering this hyper-targeted one-to-one. You mentioned department-level targeting in 14 different locations. Well, that is a very expensive ad buy if you think direct mail and geofencing is account-based marketing. That's probably poor man's ABM as we talk about it, but marketing really needs to have that buying platform to really make ensure that the right person at that target company is seeing the ad and not the wrong coworker.
So marketing is defining, identifying those messages, working hand in hand with sales. Marketing is building confidence in sales so that sales believes marketing can have an impact. Marketing is going to experience an attribution problem if this deal closes. And marketing, you've just got to get used to that.
Yeah.
Their sales is going to say they closed the deal. And guess what? You need to say, yep, you're right.
They
did close the deal because they did. They were doing a million. I sat in a meeting yesterday with an executive and a salesperson, and they were working through terms and conditions for a specific deal. Well, marketing didn't need to be there then. It was a lawyer and a CEO and a salesperson working out a deal. That's a lot of closing deals, right? In terms, conditions, prices, delivery, there's all kinds of nuances. Marketing can have massive impact, but it's still sales that closes deals. So how would you do that? Well, you've talked about ABM briefly. Maybe share a little bit about what that technology looks like and maybe explain how that, you know, what's the interaction for revenue operations? Because I think at least you're looking at a tech stack that has a CRM, customer resource management, and MAT, marketing automation technology, and ABM, account-based marketing, which is a platform, an ad platform,
right,
versus something that we would call programmatic advertising platform. So talk about all those different technologies in short to give a glimpse for an executive who's trying to figure this out.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And it really is this, you know, a trio, if you will, of having good MAT, marketing automation, that's integrated with your CRM. It's passing the business intelligence, the lead data to the CRM so that when the sales team is looking at their leads by their territory, they can see all of the marketing activity that we've captured from our own web data. So if those two techs aren't communicating, then sales is going to be in the same place they were before the program, which is not very far in the journey of having success. So we want to make sure that those two are integrated and communicating at every level. And then when you throw in this ABM technology on top of that, it's an ad delivery platform. So as Sean was mentioning, it's going to look at job titles. It's going to look at departments. It's actually going to look at the company websites on who you're targeting. So if you're targeting Coca-Cola and you're running an ABM campaign, we want to hit the operations director at Coca-Cola in Atlanta. And only account-based marketing technologies can ensure that your ad is delivering to that person, right?
And that's different from programmatic. How?
Just the buying strategy, programmatic from a television perspective, from an automated bid perspective, it really is from a ubiquitous point of view covering, maybe it's even OTT, over-the-top advertising. Programmatic is pulling in a lot of different resources in one and then automatically placing those bids in the market through numerous networks, where ABM is not multi-channel necessarily. It's really just making sure that you're targeting the right person with the right message.
So I'm doing some preparation right now. We've enjoyed a period of really great economic thriving, just success, and any kind of market instability, whether it's a economic healthcare or any kind of instability that the market creates, you've got to start thinking about what should a client be doing? What should my recommendations be, your recommendations be to our clients? And one of the recommendations I'm going to make in some future podcast episode is going to be account-based marketing. Retreat to account-based marketing. So I think one reason is right before somebody becomes a customer, you're looking at this need to close them, right? And you've got to deliver this specific one-to-one support that sales needs and wants, because sales can't be there present all the time. And this advertising tool is allowed to reach into, you can imagine opening whatever, getting your news channel feed, and you're seeing this brand, this ad, this message that you care about. So that becomes very, very powerful. Branding could take a lower seat. Early stage work should take an earlier seat. And let's put the money, the investment of money, closer to the close, the stage of customer close as we can, put more weight there. So I think account-based marketing is incredibly powerful in good times. And I think it's a point of retreat in bad times.
Yeah, absolutely.
The danger is it's expensive. There's a thing we call the marketing tax, platform tax, and you have to pay to play. So I just, it's another conversation. Maybe we address this in our MarTech
at the end. Because, you know, we're saying that if you implement revenue operations, you're instantly saving $420,000, you know, on average.
Am I going to spend all $420,000 on technology?
No, you're not. And that's okay. The misconception that we'll talk about is that when you add in the automation savings that marketing doesn't calculate enough.
Like
when
those
you,
sequences.
And the sequences from a sales perspective. I mean, the savings is when you look at time spent in a platform and wasting time, that is an easy dollar to assign to say, well, if we save $500,000 in automating and then we implement this program, well, now we're at $1 million in savings,
right?
Where we're spending time actually closing deals and not trying to support them from an admin perspective.
So if I'm an executive, I'm going to my marketing director or CMO saying, what can you do to make my sales force more effective?
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
we need to be selling, right?
Yeah, they absolutely should be. And that's going to vary, but from our perspective, we've just seen time and time again, doing a sales barrier analysis, performing an audit of the current sales tech, looking at adoption and usage rate from the CRM, and then actually from that, developing a pipeline acceleration plan, which ultimately leads to a repeatable playbook that we can leave behind. And for every campaign, every venture, here's the standard operating procedure.
Okay. Now, so we're famous for promising a 15-minute podcast and then rolling into 5 bonus minutes. So I think we're getting ready to give you 5 extra minutes of life. I guess we're really taking it our way, but this is good stuff. So you just said a lot. We could unpack. We could probably take an hour to unpack it. Would you just state that again? Because this sounds to me like the practical go home today.
Absolutely.
And think about this.
Yeah. Come back home and you heard this podcast, what do you tell your team? And it really is performing that sales barrier analysis.
It's and that's the process of coming in, mapping out all the sales behaviors, all the marketing tools over the length of a consumer decision journey, making sure they're equally weighted, that you're investing through the whole journey. And if we were doing it, we would apply behavioral science
Absolutely.
And make sure the right things are being done at the right time, which is probably as important as just making sure there's an equal weighting.
Well,
if you're doing the wrong things at the wrong time, it just doesn't matter.
You can absolutely fill the gaps and prevent any barriers. But if you're not aligned, you're not communicating, marketing and sales aren't enabling each other, then it doesn't matter that you filled the gap.
I'll pick on lawyers for a second. Yeah. They're famous for, right before closing a deal, producing these big paper books that have every detail about the firm from head to toe, their size, their scale, the number of lawyers, what their lawyers do. When really what they should have been presenting was, what's it going to cost for me to change my behavior?
Right.
And what's the predicted outcome if I make this change? What's the change, right? So if I do this, if I hire you, you're going to lower my risk and the odds of my being successful are higher. That's what needs to be told right before you close a deal in law.
Yeah.
But lawyers are giving stuff that should be happening early stage. Who are you? Are you big enough? Are you strong enough? Do you have enough expertise? So they use the wrong information at the wrong time. And in the process of that, they bury the only one or two things that they should have shared.
Yeah.
And the customer just can't even find it. I did, true story, I looked at a proposal once that had maybe 80 pages in it, and 2 pages was all it needed to be. There's no way a prospect could find those 2 pages.
Oh, yeah.
If they wanted
No chance.
Anyway, they just would have thrown it away.
They would
the
have.
Proposal.
Well, and if we perform that analysis and plot the behaviors and make sure that there are no gaps in the process for when a prospect encounters our products and services, well, we have to make sure that the tech's in place, because there's different sales tech that marketing doesn't use. And when we mentioned the CRM, I mean, that's marketing typically may not even have a seat or access to. And if they do, they're just looking at a dashboard. They're not actually in there with the sales team, you know, in the bullpen, understanding how to use it better.
And you mentioned sequences earlier. How many people have the good tool but don't use the good tool? Don't
exactly.
So makes sense.
Yeah. So definitely that sales tech audit, which then just leads us to
the audit of my tools and behaviors on the CDJ, the tech under supporting that, and then what's the next step?
It's got to be the CRM usage. We just see time and time again. It's the trade show example that we talked about in the other episode. We go to a trade show, get a business card. We forget to take a picture of it. We don't enter it in the CRM. We don't have any lead intelligence. We have records that aren't attached to the right account. We just see just a lot of bad data putting in.
Yeah. So you just went from preaching to meddling. This is getting personal. Yeah, I might be guilty of that. Everybody's
guilty. Put it in the CRM.
Yeah, I know. Put it in the CRM. But why do we not? Well, one reason as a salesperson we don't is because we don't know what's going to happen with it, or we don't trust what's going to happen.
We don't trust, exactly.
That comes back to, does sales trust marketing?
Absolutely.
Does marketing add value? I think that's what you got to go home and figure out tonight.
Yeah. So before you develop a pipeline, acceleration plan, an ABM strategy, or a repeatable playbook, you got to ask your question.
Yeah. Or find a strategic way to apply one thing.
Right.
Like, and I think ABM's the place. Yep. Get some wins.
Yep.
Let sales go, wow, that actually did help me, with the caveat that marketing don't expect a big pat in the back.
That's right.
You're just going to have to know you helped.
That's right.
So you had a story I know once of a client who pursued a particular prospect for years and years and years. You started working on it, used account-based marketing, closed a multi-million-dollar lifetime value deal out of it, and we're told that you had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, exactly. I've been chasing it for 20 years and got it in 6 months.
Yeah. So marketing, you know, have thick skin, earn your way in, trust, and then put this revenue operations role in the middle to be this coach, to be the person that's coordinating, organizing, and supporting. That's that role that is so powerful.
And we're seeing that ROI. I mean, our average right now is over 4,000% ROI with just these ABM strategies. I couldn't agree more. That's just an easy take home for executive to implement.
All right. So wrapping up, we've introduced this concept of revenue operations. We've defined it. What is RevOps? We've talked about why you should care. We've looked at early stage and how demand generation carries a customer through a couple steps of the buying cycle. We've begun the conversation with sales enablement and how it carries a prospect up to the point of the flip, becoming an exchange relationship, closing the deal. So the next dialogue with you, Will, is going to be about customer success.
Right.
How does revenue operations overlap into customer success? A lot of people talk about sales and marketing alignment. I rarely hear people talk about sales, marketing,
and
customer success. And I rarely hear people talk about sales, marketing, customer success alignment, and innovation, and how innovation supports the whole thing. So let's come back and let's continue our conversation on revenue operations. This was the second 5 for 15. Third. Where are we?
Did intro, demand gen, sales enablement.
So this is the second of five.
Second of five.
Look forward to the next one, and we'll see you then.
Talk soon.